Captivating.
Possibilities.
Collaborative.
Collaboration.
Positive and optimistic.
Expanding.
Pure life.
Okay. Welcome to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I'm Celaine Diaris, your host. I'm the co-founder and executive director of At the Epicenter. And today I have a very special guest and, full disclosure, a longtime dear friend, Marcy Zeroff. Thank you, Marcy, for being a part of this broadcast today. So grateful. Marcy is an eco-lifestyle pioneer and actually coined the term eco-fashion in 1995, well ahead of anybody having these sorts of insightful ideas. She's the founder and CEO of EcoFashion Corp and the author of an excellent book, Eco-Renaissance. It's really a guide on how we can be co-creating a stylish, sexy, and sustainable world. Thank you so much, Marcy.
Thanks for having me, Celaine. What a joy to co-create with you.
Thank you. Absolute. So I'd like to start a little bit around your vision that started back in 1995, and I know it was preceded by other things, but I'm interested today for us to look into the apparel world, the fashion world, which for many folks is still not something we think about when we think about ways to be green, and that is obviously a very important part of what we all do daily in getting dressed, and the impact of the apparel industry is really quite intense on ecosystems, human well-being, and why don't you just share a little bit about some of the high points that have become your threshold for action?
Well, because I started on the food side, you know, as I moved into fashion and textiles, it was almost like being able to take the same learnings and just apply them to a different widget, a different product category. But a lot of, you know, a lot of the issues that we would see in the food system start with agriculture. And a lot of the issues that we see in the fashion industry start at the source. So, you know, I've spent the last 25 years really in the trenches of the sustainable fashion or eco-fashion movement, kind of connecting source to story and looking at, you know, soil and cotton issues, all the way through to waste issues, water, chemicals, social justice. I mean, there's a number of different spokes in the wheel of, you know, impact of the fashion industry. I mean, if you pull the curtain back and you look at both the human and environmental impacts, the fashion industry is one of the largest air and water polluters in the world. 20% of the world's fresh water pollution is coming from textile treatment and dyeing. 10% of the world's carbon impact is from the fashion industry, you know. And then when you look at cotton, which is really where I started, frankly, because I came out of food. And when I learned that 60% of a cotton plant is going into the food stream, that was one of my first aha, food and fiber are connected moments. And when I went into the consumer facing side of it, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Our first basic need is food. And then we move into shelter and clothing and that which protects around us, which is clothing and home textiles. So for me, you know, I loved fashion. I was always into fashion. When I started to learn about these impacts, and I'll go deeper into kind of the cotton impacts, which really blew my mind. You know, it was really about trying to break all the stigmas and trying to demonstrate that it should be not why would you buy organic cotton and sustainable fashion, but why wouldn't you if you have a choice that gives you everything you want?
I love that. You know, when you talk about 20% of water pollution is coming from the fashion industry, that is a staggering number. That's big.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of that's happening in developing parts of the world.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, some running jokes that aren't funny. Like you can tell what colors the factories are dyeing in China by the colors of the rivers. Mm. Right. And, you know, people think that their clothing is growing in the department store, you know, and that like people's lives aren't like being affected. But, you know, if you watch movies like The True Cost or River Blue, And you start to see, you know, those people in third world countries that are not only growing our fibers, but they're also working in these factories with extremely toxic conditions. It's a really serious issue on, you know, human exploitation and a real infringement on human, you know, social justice and how we should be treating people who are our brothers and sisters across the world, right?
I love that you just said that, because as I lean into this sort of broader systemic types of transformational change that I know we both advocate for me, there, it's almost standing on the very ground of the recognition that we're one. We all have the basic needs for dignity and respect and safe shelter and clean food and clean air and water. And yet there has been a willingness on the part of all of us to somehow turn away from that basic shared reality. And how in your work do you think we're going to really deeply transform that misperception of how we really are one, and how we treat each other is as important as how we treat ourselves?
I think you'll appreciate this, since you were at my wedding on 11-11-11. But, you know, we're going to take 1 to 11. We're going to join forces, because 1 plus 1 equals 11. And we're stronger together than we are apart. And it's going to take all of us holding hands to transform the fashion industry. And that's why we have to build new business models that are win-win-win. I think one of the greatest gifts that's ever been given to our industry is social media and the internet. Why? Because it forces companies to be now be held accountable. So it's not even about staying ahead anymore. It's about not being left behind or being called out on all the things you're doing.
Right.
And all the companies that thought they could get away with all the things that they were doing, whether it was Rana Plaza and the absolute uproar that was, you know, created in the fashion revolution movement that's still going strong and growing every year, to, you know, what's happening in agriculture right now, and farmers just being stuck on, you know, the pesticide treadmills. And, you know, you could Google these stories. I mean, every half an hour in India, a conventional cotton farmer is now committing suicide, getting stuck in this complete treadmill of despair. And that's a financial breakdown. That's a soil breakdown. You know, they don't know. They're literally in desperation about, you know, how climate change is truly affecting them. You know, this isn't just reading about. This is something they're living. Mm-hmm. You know, all the way through to the magnitude and multitude of chemicals that are just so pervasive in our environment. It's no coincidence that 70 million people in the United States have, you know, allergies and asthma. You know, a third of the population has chemical sensitivities and, you know, skin conditions. And, you know, we talk a lot about food, but we're wearing textiles 24/7 for the most part, whether it's sheets and towels or robes, or it's our t-shirts, our jeans, our dresses, our jackets, our hats. It's just, we are in it, and it's on our skin, the largest organ in our body, our primary organ for absorption. So going back to collaboration, and I talk in my book about kind of the 5 key ingredients of, you know, the eco-renaissance, or the shift in popular culture that's happening. And it's creativity, which is essentially through the lens of design, we can change the world. We have to design, you know, new systems that are built on no compromise, right? So great taste. And oh, by the way, it's regenerative and organic. Great style. And oh, by the way, it's regenerative, organic, or sustainable, or ethically made, right? Great functional beauty products that smell good, that are aesthetically pleasing. And oh, by the way, they're plant-based wisdom, right?
Right.
So creativity is key. Connection. And we all know we have to, you know, be connected and share these win-win models and share with each other and collaborate, right? Because again, we're stronger together than apart. And then ultimately, you know, consciousness and community are the other two elements of this shift. And that's where the social and the human element comes in, which at the core of who we all are, you know, we are social creatures. We want to love, we want to be loved, right? So
absolutely.
I always say, you know, my work is when I'm in the farms with the farmers, that's like water for chocolate for me, because that's the DNA of the work that I do. And it is fueled by the mutual love I feel from the farmers, who their whole life is about the seed. You know, the seed is life and everything.
Absolute.
And I'm taking those stories because it is has a different level of meaning for me. And I'm planting those seeds and cultivating them and sharing them with as many people as I can. So it is a different way of thinking. A lot of the old school fashion systems are very siloed and very broken. Incentives are built on just the wrong models, and sort of, you know, they are kind of at odds with sustainable systems, or, you know, a mindset around holistic or ecosystem. So we got to crack things open, and we're kind of living in a little bit of a modern day Star Wars of the dark and the light, you know, but happening. I mean, more and more, you know, more and more retailers are shutting down, more and more brands are going away. It's just, it's a big shakeout now.
You're right. And it's interesting to just even use that idea of, you know, light and dark, or, you know, things that are for versus things that are against. And I'm an advocate of the for. You know, we're for a life-affirming system. We're for a soil-enhancing cropping systems. So that, I would like to segue to talk to you a little bit about what you're doing in India, because you mentioned it just a moment ago. And share a little bit about what Reset is, which is part of your constellation of efforts under EcoFashion Corp. If you would just say a little bit about what inspired Reset, what is Reset? Let's start with what is Reset, and then what inspired that?
Yeah, so Reset is an acronym for Regenerate the Environment, Society, and Economy Through Textiles. And it is a farm project that was co-created between myself and a dear friend, brother in India named Anil Kumar. Anil has been running a nonprofit, an NGO, and we've known each other for well over a decade, have danced with each other through the years, and kind of it was so clear that we shared core values where, again, coming together, we could build a turnkey farm to finished product business model where we could help drive transparency, storytelling at the farm level with, you know, making the farmers heroes, because really they are, and rebuilding the soil and taking them off of the broken systems and helping them make more money and building the market while we're training the farmers, so that we create, you know, this model where everybody's serving each other to serve themselves, right?
So, you know, generating the supply, but also creating the demand, which is so important for that complete cycle.
Yes. So what we do with Reset is we get farmers who commit to joining the Reset program. We provide them with GMO-free seeds. We provide them with training to get into the program. And in the program, they learn how to make all their own inputs, fully weaned off of any GM seeds or any chemical inputs or fertilizers or anything. They are taught regenerative practices, so crop rotation, cover cropping, low tillage or no tillage. They, you know, cows are big in India, obviously. There's animal grazing, and we make all of our fertilizers. I've done it myself out of, you know, cow urine and cow dung, and really, you know, utilizing that relationship, because it's obviously an interconnection. And then the farmers, we're starting to create baseline studies where we're measuring the carbon in the soil. So obviously as we rebuild the soil, we expect to see, better soil health and more carbon in the soil and topsoil, just that is healthy and more, you know, biodiversity. And we want to capture kind of all those touch points, plus water retention, plus the income, you know, improvements to the farmers, plus pesticide reduction. You know, less than 6% of the agriculture in India is cotton, but over 50% of the pesticides that are being used are on cotton. And it is the last crop in India that actually even allows GMO seeds. And so, yeah, and it's so, you know, the farmers don't want them, but they don't know better. They don't know what else to do, and they don't know how to get off the system. And even, you know, we work with the Indian government at Reset, and they support, you know, our training and our certification costs, all of our farmers get onto the control union certification right away. So they start the transition right away. And during the 3 year, during the 3 year transition to ultimately they'll be qualified for regenerative organic certification. And during that 3 year transition, after the first year, they're already, you know, because they've been 1 year in transition, we can take the fiber and take it up a GOTS certified supply chain, an organic certified supply chain, to have a GOTS and conversion certified product at the end of the day.
So you're already adding extra value even in their first year of in this new program.
Correct. And, you know, that we're giving them assurances on, you know, when they get to that 3 year transition, we already have buyers that, you know, want that organic cotton, you know, and I think, and they want to know that it's the real deal. And hopefully, right. Hopefully within the next year or two, we'll have blockchain technology as well embedded into this system. But we've seen even in the first,
I'm getting excited.
Yeah, me too. Even, you know, like even in the first, you know, pilot of Reset, the farmers are seeing a 25% increase in yield on their cotton.
Wow.
We did have this season a bunch of farmers who the seed wasn't able to germinate and because of the drought conditions. So, you know, that's probably our biggest challenge one of them. But we have a lot of excitement about Reset. We have you know, people from other states in India, there's 30 states, already reaching out to us to see if we'll set Reset up in their states. So our goal, you know, we have 500 farmers right now, but our goal is to have 20,000 in the next 5 years minimum.
Excellent. That's excellent. And are you already having conversations with other companies that are interested in being part of your sourcing group that will be wanting to buy the output from?
Absolutely. I've had interest from some of the highest end luxury brands in the world to the biggest mass market retailers in the world to fashion designers that are on the cutting edge of really awesome brands they're building to e-commerce companies. We actually have almost one of each of what I just said coming with me in November to visit the Reset project in India. We have a special project, which was very dear to my heart, where 55 of our Reset farmers who are already certified organic that we had actually set them up on Reset from the organic level versus the conversion level. But where we're resetting them is into biodynamic farming. And those 55 organic biodynamic farmers, we're in partnership with Mercola, Dr. Mercola and Mercola.com, and we'll be making all certified organic biodynamic cotton textile products that will be launching summer 2020 for Mercola from Reset Cotton. So
I love it, Marcy. That's awesome.
Lots of cool stuff happening.
Well, you know, I just want to say thank you for this, just your absolute tenacity and that you just don't give up. You are such a beautiful goddess warrior. Pursuing your vision and always taking it up a new notch. So I just really applaud how you have made something as potentially hugely impactful in a country that is desperate to improve so many aspects of human well-being and ecological health. And talk about a place that's been exploited for a long time. That I just am really happy to hear your goals to grow it to that many, you know, and these are small shareholder farmers.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a moment and explain what a small shareholder farmer is. So a lot of people listening, they may have heard that term, but I don't think many of us even understand how much or how little that actually means in terms of the kind of land that's being cultivated.
You're just talking about a couple of acres max, you know, for each of these farmers. And, you know, the problem is the current system, you know, when they're given GMO seeds and almost all of these farmers are illiterate. And when they're given these seeds, they're told, you know, they're going to be their like saving grace, like, you know, yield and blah, blah, blah. And what happens is the farmers don't know not to believe them, and they plant them and you know, they then realize, oh, I have to buy these chemicals, which of course they don't understand. Even if they're taught they should use X amount, they don't, they're kind of, there's a lot of misuse. The bugs ultimately build resistance to, you know, the initial round of chemicals and seeds, which then ultimately gets stronger very quickly. And the farmers end up where they can't afford them. So, aha, here comes the loan sharks and the companies, banks that are in partnership with the seed companies and the chemical companies. And they show up and they're like, we'll help you to procure all this at like 50, 60% interest rates. Right, where they're like putting these farmers into these ridiculous systems of they're borrowing money to pay for inputs to put on their land, which is ultimately destroying their land, which is making their soil unhealthy, turning it to dirt, making it less, you know, vibrant and strong to be
alive.
Able to.
It's not alive. They kill the soil.
Right, exactly. And then ultimately, of course, you get weak plants, you know, weak soil, weak plants, more bugs, more sprays needed, more sprays.
And less yield, I'm sure.
I mean, and the whole system goes, right? So these farmers are just, they can't even put food on the table for their families anymore. And they live in these tribal villages that, look, I've been going to India to these villages for over 20 years. And I mean, they're still cooking on sticks and stones and, you know, living simply. And it blows my mind. It really puts everything into perspective. Like they honor and cherish their land so much. And we're like completely taking advantage of these smallholder farmers in horrific ways. And it's happening all over the world, which, you know, fortunately now more information is getting out again because stories get shared. I mean, that's the power again of like telling these stories and empowering these farmers to get onto a positive cycle so they can talk about it. Because in these smallholder villages, news travels fast.
Right.
And their main, you know, method of communication is just word of mouth. So we got a lot of farmers kind of watching reset, like, is this working? You know, is this something we should do? And we have, you know, a lot of different villages. There could be, you know, 20 families in a village. There could be, you know, 75, 100 families in a village. But, you know, there are these micro cosms and sort of a macrocosm of Indian farms.
Right.
You know, we're one, you know, one group at a time, one village at a time. But also the beauty is we're interconnecting the food and the fiber. And, you know, we're also looking at within our reset cotton farms, we're intercropping with lentils, you know, we're cover cropping, and then we're, you know, crop rotating with millet or, you know, some kind of cashews. Or so we're looking at what are the other markets that where the villagers, the farmers, can also get other sources of income. And then we're taking it even one step further than that. At the end of the growing season, generally speaking, farmers historically, they burn all the stalks and all the remnants. And that's what creates all this like pollution in the air.
Right.
We just signed a deal with the Dutch government who has funded a project that's going to start this year where they're going to collect all the leftover remnants at the end of the harvest with the stalks, everything into the biomass and turn it into packaging materials. They're going to send it all to a company that makes packaging materials and is looking for that kind of biomass. So it's like we're embedding the cradle to cradle principles in.
That is very, very exciting. And I like hearing that other piece of now you're stopping a really destructive practice that also does damage to the soil biome when you burn.
Yep.
It's a whole host of like tradition and patterns that aren't really necessarily in the best interest of people and or place.
Right. So now it just comes down to like, what's the solution? Because that's obviously a big problem. And then layer on top of that, that the farmers have yet another way to make money when they
another sell market.
That's so like wonderful. Our goal is to get our farmers to be making at least 100% more money than they were making before they started reset.
Wow. That's revolution.
Zero budget. Listen, you know, if you ask farmers what they really care about, you know, they care about their financial livelihoods and they care about protecting their families and their farms from climate change. They don't really understand, you know, the pesticides or the GMOs. It's almost like over their heads, you know. But if what we're teaching them addresses the first two issues, and oh, by the way, it's so much healthier for you and your soil and da 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 da.
Yeah.
We just have to prove all this to them, you know.
Right. So in your constellation of activity, there's also creating apparel itself. And I recall when you started Metaware, you were the first Scott certified manufacturer in the United States. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing on this other side of your enterprise activity as an actual manufacturer.
Okay, so as a manufacturer, Metaware, as you mentioned, is a turnkey plug and play. We say it's, you know, it's like buildable, customizable, eco-fashion from source to story. Menu number one, what stories do you want to tell? Made in USA, certified organic, fair trade, cradle to cradle, circular. What is it? Menu two, what products do you want to make? We actually make women's apparel, men's, babies, kids, underwear, loungewear, sheets, towels, robes, bed and bath. Menu three, price point targets and volumes. Menu four, label. And we have a bunch of our clients besides the private label that also do co-brand and position Metaware like the Intel inside of sustainable fashion.
Nice.
So in our multiple supply chains and how we plug and play our different clients and partners depends on what those other menus are, the products and the price point targets and the volumes. So we have an entire platform. Our first and kind of starting point was building a factory platform here in the United States where we do turnkey seaweed-based printing on certified organic cotton t-shirts. We stock three different styles. We make it super easy. Send us your art. Boom. We can deliver, you know, printed t-shirts. And we have dyeing and embroidery in our factory as well. Garment dyeing. Mm-hmm. Everything is GOTS certified. We were also not only the first GOTS certified manufacturer in North America, but we were also the first cradle to cradle certified manufacturer of cradle to cradle certified product in the world. And that was in 2013. Wow.
So before we go much further, let's explain some of these terms that we're using. GOTS, I'm sure, is not a household term. So would you share a little bit, what does GOTS mean? And then let's also just touch on the cradle to cradle.
Sure. So the GOTS standard is the Global Organic Textile Standard. It is the platinum standard for certified organic textile. It means everything from the farm being NOP certified organic cotton, according to the same, you know, methodologies and regulations as any agricultural ingredient.
So that's like a USDA certified organic qualification.
Correct. So if you were going to stop there at the cotton level and make cotton bowls, you could actually use the NOP seal on the cotton bowls. Okay. But if you go beyond the cotton bowl and you start using spinning to dyeing, processing, anything that you're going to add into a, you know, 99% of textile products, you then are no longer allowed to use the NOP seal, the organic seal that most people recognize, because the 5% allowances in that seal do not include allowances that are relevant for textiles. They're all food, living ingredients. So we created our equivalent of the NOP seal, which is the GOTS seal, which is specific for textile products, which basically says it's the 95-5 rule. 95% of the product has to be certified organic fiber to say it's an organic textile, 70% organic if it's made with, and you can have the 30%. We have our allowances, what you can and you can't use. You can never use conventional cotton, but you can use Tencel. Lyocell, or you can use, you know, a wool, or you can use, you know, there are fibers that can be part of that. It also includes, just like if you had a certified organic finished product on the shelf, everything that touched the product has to qualify, same thing. If you have a product on the shelf that has a GOTS seal on it, a Global Organic Textile Standard seal, it means every single thing in that product, from the dyes to the finishes, to the sundries, the buttons, the packaging, everything was looked at and audited. It's part of a full transparency system. So we are tracking literally from cotton to yarn to fabric to cutting and sewing to dyeing, printing, packaging, transportation, everything. Wow. So when you get a GOTS certified product, you know, it's not, you know, it might not be like, where most people don't understand this. If you see something that says it's an organic product and it's not GOTS certified, you don't know if it's like 5% organic cotton dipped in like heavy chlorine bleach and then dyed with like heavy metal, you know, conventional dyes in a, you don't know if it's GOTS certified. You do know, that it's free of all harmful chemicals. It's free of GMO seeds. It's free of everything from chlorine bleach to formaldehyde to acetone to optical brighteners to heavy metals. There's no plastic, there's no, you know, at the end of the day that you're getting a truly healthy organic textile product.
And I would imagine that another aspect of that is that if you're wearing a product that's GOTS certified, you're also not going to be creating microfibers when you wash that item that then has this whole other impact in our water systems that we're all just now starting to learn about.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah. It's like been like the biggest, like what, you know, and it came out of nowhere like 3 or 4 years ago, if even that. And, you know, I think what people don't realize is every single synthetic garment in the history of mankind, so we're talking since like the 1950s, right, is just shedding little microfibers of plastic into our washing machines that are going into our rivers, into our oceans, and just piling up. And like 90% of fish today have traces of microfibers in them. You know, about 35% of the plastic pollution in the oceans is from textiles, you know, microfiber pollution. It is horrific. And it's an endocrine disruptor, you know, microfibers and plastic. And so if you're eating fish, this is like a new day where we thought fish was such a healthy choice.
Right.
You know, it's not just mercury anymore, right?
No, it's hard to be a human and be awake at the same time.
We're trying, yes.
But you know, what I think about when we talk about all of these different combined impacts is that this is also an opportunity. It's an opportunity for innovation. It's an opportunity for creativity, as you said, is sort of your number one on your 5 points in Eco-Renaissance, is that creativity is sort of this wonderful, amazing capacity. And so with these huge challenges come equal amazing opportunity. And I just see you as one of those people who's looking to be generating an opportunity to address what is a challenge with absolute import and impact, but to just flip that on to, well, then how do I create in a way that is not doing this kind of harm and is actually generating benefit and well-being?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I modeled my very first company before I got into textiles, which is now known as the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. I started that, co-founded in 1990. And it was built on initially on the idea of Gulliver's Travels and, you know, Jonathan Swift, vision is the art of seeing things invisible, right? You can create whatever reality you want to create. And of course, we all love Albert Einstein, you know, that we can't solve today's problems with, you know, the same consciousness that created those problems. So we have to create there too, a different way to see things, because if we keep, you know, like Who Moved My Cheese, if we keep going down the same business as usual, it ain't getting any better. I saw last night Zach Bush speak, and he you know, gave some pretty staggering facts. You know, he's got all kinds of qualifications as a doctor, and, you know, 3 doctorates, and amazing, and really into regenerative agriculture, by the way, if you don't know him.
I do know him.
So he said, we've got like 60 years left for humanity, basically. You know, we hear with climate change, 10 to 12, right? But holy moly, you know, I have children. Like, I'm like, whoa, in my children's lifetime, like, humans as we know them could go away. Like, this is no joke. Like, game on. So if you're not a part of the solution, you're a part of the problem. So why I started MetaWare was to make sustainability easy, because I see how daunting it can be in fashion. A garment can change hands 7 to 10 times in a supply chain. So, you know, if you're trying to just do normal fashion, it's complicated. Now you layer on transparency and raw material sourcing at the farm, right? Like, so foreign to the old school model that.
Absolutely.
And then, and then you've got to take it up your factories who have no clue what they're doing. And you don't know if they're going to do it right, which is going to leave you exposed, potential like liability while you're trying to do good.
Right.
How do you navigate that? Right. So we started MetaWare to, like, it's almost like risk mitigation marries like true expertise of navigating the supply chain, all the certifications, creating that, you know, turnkey plug and play, deliver to your warehouse door, a fully transparent, authentic, certified, sustainable program of any kind of product from apparel to home. And then we have two house brands at MetaWare or Eco Fashion Court that are about to launch. One is home and one is apparel. So that we can then offer a brand and partner with other companies who are looking for this, but not only do they want us to do it, they want us to actually give them the brand too. So as an example, very soon on September 26th, I'm launching a 1-hour organic lifestyle show on QVC with our new home brand, Farm to Home, which
awesome.
10 a.m. Tune in, my big debut.
Girl, you let us know. We'll shout it out there.
Amazing. So, and then our other brand that's going to be coming to life later this year is called Yes And, because the whole story, and this is in my book, my intro page, which is yes, style, quality, fit, color, comfort, hand. And oh, by the way, it's also organic, regenerative, ethically made, and all the good stuff. But we start with giving people what they want and, you know, not just style, quality, but price. So affordability and accessibility are equally as important as authenticity. So that's probably the single greatest roadblock why more people aren't buying sustainable fashion. They don't know where to find it or they can't afford it.
Exactly. I love that you brought that up, because it's kind of, I'm thinking a little bit about some of the companies that have really made their gold in fast fashion and cheap. And the real cost, which I think is going to be interesting as we go forward, sort of think about what you just said, the pressures on the ecosystem of our planet to support life as we know it are very stressed. And we don't even understand how quickly things can flip as a result of the stress that we're putting on the large sustaining capacity of the planet. So how to create that access point, how to create the affordability so that it's not a point of, I can't afford this. It's more, I can't afford not to choose this.
Correct. It's not why, it's why not, right? And it's yes and again, it's the tiebreaker, because I think if people have their basic needs met and you layer on, you know, and by the way, you know, we're doing well by doing good and here's how, and it's, you know, and you can actually show and guide them into the experience of voting with their dollars and actually making a difference, because we can, I know it's the journey of 1,000 miles and God knows I've been on that journey a long time. I'm still learning something new every day, and I'm grateful that I found this path, and I just want to share it with anyone and everyone that is, you know, in my field, because it's, you know, clock's ticking and this is a collective shift that has to happen.
Absolutely. So you're listening to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change, and I'm speaking with Marcy Zaroff, who is an eco-fashion extraordinaire human being. I'm Selene. I'm the host of this program. Let's just go one more step before we conclude our conversation. Let's talk a little bit about the home side. So we've talked about fashion, but you know, we mentioned earlier, here's the skin, and it comes into contact with the sheets in our bed, the pajamas that we're wearing, the robe that we put on after the shower, the towels that we dry our hands and wrap our babies in. So how are you fixing that for us?
Yeah, well, I don't know why anybody wouldn't buy organic home textiles. You know, I look at whether it's you know, your face is on the pillow, or you're wrapping yourself in a towel, or, you know, you're lying on your throw and your decorative pillows on your couch, or, you know, you're lying doing your work across your comforter, not even in your sheets. I mean, it's, you're breathing it in. If it's cotton and you think it's, quote, unnatural, you know, I would say that would be the equivalent of looking at conventional dairy and saying that milk is a natural. That's why people, you know, have moved towards organic, because they've learned that, oop, it's not so natural when it's not organic. Well, similarly, you know, cotton that is conventionally grown and produced is ridden. It's the most heavily sprayed industry in agriculture. Cotton, not to mention all the social issues that I shared earlier, not to mention it is always chlorine bleached, not to mention all the toxic dyes and finishes that are truly harmful to our skin and our bodies that, you know, we are absorbing every day. So, you know, a conventional bed sheet can have the cotton it takes to make that could be about, you know, 2 pounds of pesticides worth of cotton. You know, so, you know, there's a lot of harmful ingredients that have gone into both the soil as well as the ultimate finished product. And even when you wash it, I mean, ultimately it's like systemic, you know, it's like trying to wash a carrot and saying, well, if it was grown conventionally, I'm just going to wash the chemicals off. It's in the soil, it's in the system, it's in the DNA. So in textiles too, it's in the fiber. I mean, cotton is a beautiful, if you haven't seen it live, I mean, it's this beautiful bowl. It's a flower of life. And, you know, grown conventionally, it's just like ridden with all of these chemicals. And so I think if you have an option and it's affordable and modern design, which is what we're bringing to life, as I mentioned, with Farm to Home, Mercola, we make their home textiles, which are awesome. And some other companies that are out there. And I just feel like there's enough options out there today that I can't imagine why anyone would want to buy a kind of really chemically, unethically made and or toxic materials.
Absolutely. Well, I thank you for your time. And I thank you for your just resilient spirit and how often you have kept this as your clear and unassailable purpose and focus. So it's just a delight to know you as a friend and to appreciate you as a pioneer in this work, and deep gratitude.
Thank you. Well, you know, look, we're all in this together, which is, you know, why I had named Under the Canopy what I did. We're all under the canopy of the planet's ecosystem together, and we share the air and the water and this planet, our home. And we need to wear the change we wish to see, and really all, you know, hold hands to create, as I say in my book, co-create a stylish, sexy, and sustainable world.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that this is an inclusive conversation. We're talking about people all over the world, and that's the good news.
That's it. We're just getting started.
Yes, exactly. We are.
Such a pleasure, such a joy, always, sister, and you know, kindred spirit. So off we go.
Absolute. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, and hopefully we're all, you know, going to onward, inward, and upward. So.
Voices Elevating Stories Activating Change podcast series is produced by At the Epicenter, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The podcast and video recordings are made possible by the generous support of people like you. Make a tax-deductible donation or sign up as a monthly supporter by visiting attheepicenter.com/donate. Support packages start at $1 per month. The podcast series is also sponsored by several corporate and organization sponsors. To become a podcast sponsor, visit attheepicenter.com/contact to let us know of your interest. If you found this podcast episode insightful and meaningful, please pass it on by sharing it with a friend or colleague who will also enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in, for your support, and for activating change.